When I look at your website, are you running a business or what is it that you do?
You know, it's funny because we were talking a bit about this before we began recording, but you asked me, are Nicole and I business people? Because we were talking about the fact that we are launching a brand. And I said, you know, it's funny, I don't want to say that we're not business minded, but our heart and soul has been, for me, within the health and wellness space, and for Nicole within sustainability, health, and safety. And really, that has been my life's work. So starting with myself first, my own personal journey to wellness from a very young age. I always tell this story. When I was 14, I made a transition in my life. Before that, I used to be what I call a candyholic. So I would buy 10 pack of Nowlaters at the local bodega before I went to school, hide them in my desk, and within the course of the school day, I would eat all of them. But I always had this internalized fear that I wasn't healthy, not only from my eating habits, I used to say junk food, candy, but also being in Harlem, New York at the time, and just the roach infestation and just what we used to spray inside the apartment. I was like, this can't be good. And I was young. At 14, I got a scholarship to go away to boarding school. And I was like, I won't be underneath my grandmother's roof anymore. This is a time in my life that I want to make changes, that I'm going to make choices. And I went cold turkey. I stopped eating candy. I stopped eating chips. I stopped drinking soda. And I always tell students when I work with them, as well as an adult that I coach. So as you said on the website, I'm a health coach as well, that if at 14 I could make a choice, because it's a mental choice, and make a decision to transform my life and begin my own personal wellness journey. I always say that the messenger has to live the message. And because before you can go out there to promote anything, you have to be that. And so my journey began at that point. At 14, at 19, I became a vegan. I came from a meat-eating family that everyone told me, you're going to die. That's crazy. You're not eating meat. And began that, basically really started to take a close look at food. And when I received my master's in 98, I launched a business, Madame Chang Inc., where I raised funds. I went into nonprofits. I went into community-based organizations and schools, educating urban youth about health and wellness.
Yeah. So where did you grow up?
So I am Jamaican. And some people like look at my last name and like, first they look at my first name and like, Madame Athena Chang. Boy, you gave yourself a title? No. I'm like, Madame is really my first name. And Chang, they're like, Chang? Who's that tall black woman calling herself Chang? My grandfather migrated from China to Jamaica. There are a lot of Chinese Jamaicans. So in regards to, I migrated from Jamaica, and I always tell people this is like, I began with very simple, beautiful beginnings. I grew up on a farm without electricity, and then went to the city of Harlem, New York, which was the complete opposite with the upground train station, and was raised in Harlem until I went to boarding school in Connecticut for high school.
How old were you when you moved to New York?
I was 6 years old.
Six. So do you have, so you still have memories of?
Oh, yes, because now I'm 44. But I was six, and so that was in 1980 that I migrated to the United States.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so did you, I mean, I guess maybe because you started in Jamaica, but I've heard stories from other women who talk about, there were certain ways you were expected to do your hair, for example. We're kind of focused in this story, particularly on cosmetics and hair products, and that doesn't even sound like much of a focus because there's so much there to begin with. But I mean, were there expectations of how you would do your hair, how you would present yourself?
Oh yes, I remember being young, and this is a big standout for me because I do have a daughter, a black daughter, and I always had this level of consciousness. I remember hating my hair. I remember I used to watch Who's the Boss and Alyssa Milano, and all I dreamt of is that I want my hair to lay like that. And if I cut bangs, because I tried to cut bangs and it just was like, it just sprung up and did not look like Alyssa Milano's. But I remember literally one day being in the mirror and crying and wanting to pull my hair out because the images that were out there did not say that my hair texture was beautiful. I came from a family, I identify as a Black woman, and I came from a family where there is a mixture. And my grandmother's hair was long and straight, and her skin extremely, I mean, many people thought she was a Caucasian. But just in terms of the mental oppression that existed and it is dominant, so not just from the hair, but also from the skin complexion. And I remember because my grandmother, too, was stuck in her thought pattern. And she would be like, drink milk. It'll lighten your skin. You know, that mentality that's there. And so when I think of my own personal journey to embracing who I am, you know, and one token is the story of I'm not light enough or my hair isn't straight enough. And then there's another piece of I'm still in the mixed hair category. You know, my hair is not as coarse as my daughter's. So in another environment, people feeling that they are better than others because their hair is a little mixed and being told, oh, your hair, you got some good hair. You know, that those statements that are made or is that your daughter? How come her hair isn't good like yours? And these are the things that are being passed on and continue to be passed on. So the space I'm in from.
So just to clarify, that still happens.
Oh, yes. It still happens. And when the internalized racism is so deep that people don't have awareness that, you know, the fact that it there are words that are thrown out still to this day, you know, the good hair, bad hair syndrome. On the flip side, again, as I said, because my hair is more of a mixed hair texture, another problem is being glorified for my hair texture. You know, like, oh, you know, that's another end of the equation. So in one environment, it's like, oh, it's not straight enough. In another environment is, well, it's mixed and it's not like there. It's not coarse or the term that I don't like, which is nappy, you know? And our children continue to be brought up. And when it comes to that space, that safer beauty space and the products that we are using from skin lighteners to hair straighteners to even like douching because of our perceived body odor that was placed on us as Black women, this is real. And so when I go out there and speak, I might know the science. But the science for me is not the heart of the discussion. It is the internalized pieces. Why do we? What are the social factors that impact our product use that make us spend and do these harmful things to ourselves? Even for some of us who have the education and understand what it is doing to us on a health level. You know, and you have to undo. And at 14, I remember doing that, starting to undo and starting to question everything that had been placed before me, things that had been shaped by my environment, from my family to my neighborhood, to my schools, to what I saw on television, really undoing that. And it's a vicious, vicious cycle.
Yeah. Do you remember what sparked that at age 14? Was it just the move or what? Like,
I think stepping into a space in my life where I was going to be more independent. And for instance, I grew up, my grandmother, we went to church every Sunday. I carried the cross. I was an acolyte underneath the Episcopalian religion. I remember at that point saying, you know what, Athena, you believe in God because you were also taught this way. So we're going to put everything on the table and we're going to question everything that you think you know and think you believe. And let's look at life in general. And that began, I was going to enter a new environment. And entering that, and at that time, and this is the double edge, growing up in Harlem, and I remember applying to private schools on the Upper East Side and taking the bus across from where I live to the Upper East Side and seeing a very different environment. Black began to equal poor in my mind. And so again, with that oppression and the visuals that are around me, I remember going into boarding school thinking, oh my gosh, I've been saved. This is a much better environment because I didn't like where I was from. And so even within high school, because I was one of many at my boarding school at Miss Porter's at the time, they've gotten much better in terms of diversity. And it was a powerful experience. But I had to also go through the growth of not being ashamed of who I was, where I was from, and understanding the systems in place that continue to oppress people of color and Black people within the United States as a product of rearrangement of thought in terms of we created that, you know? So again, it began at 14 where I began, it's like eyes wide open, right? Mm-hmm. Walking down my own individual path. And then a process through high school where I no longer saw the environment, the wider environment that I was stepping into as better, right? And as an escape from my oppressive environment. Mm-hmm. And kind of taking that away. You know, everything is a process. And at 19, I did relax my hair. My grandmother didn't allow me to do it when I was younger, but by the time I was in high school, she allowed me to relax my hair. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I can be beautiful now. Again, mentally oppressed. But my first year of college, I cut off my relaxer and I locked my hair. Yeah. So that's another, you know, life is about growth. Life is about taking things, the person that has been created, you know, by what's around you, what you've been taught, and really taking a journey to come in touch with the internal self that is far more embracing than what's been placed on our minds.
And so here we are today. You're here to speak about these issues for
yes.
women who are concerned about environmental impacts. On themselves, on their families, on their communities, on the environment. So you were just mentioning you're going to be at Essence Fest. Is that what it's called?
Yep. So I have Nicole Acevedo on the line, who is not just my business partner, but one of my dearest friends. And I learn from her each and every day, but an amazing scientist who is all heart and passion and really is that gauge for me in regards to, as I said, I came from a health and wellness space where I had primarily focused on diet and exercise. And I branched into the safer beauty space 3 years ago. And Nicole has definitely been that educator for me.
So what is Nicole, do you want to, what is the safer beauty space?
Yeah, so it's, you know, in the world of emerging definitions in terms of everything we're exposed to, right? So there is this concept of organic and natural beauty and where the idea that everything that is synthetic is bad and everything that's natural is good. You know, that's kind of been in our nomenclature now for, you know, more than a decade or so. And so what people are starting to realize is that this concept of safer or clean or cleaner beauty is a bit more representative of what's better for our health and the environment. So being careful to not classify anything that comes from a natural source as safe and not to demonize everything that's synthesized as bad. So essentially that's really when we're talking about safer beauty and clean beauty, that's the space we're inhabiting. It's about really taking a close look at the potential human health and eco-toxicological impacts of the different chemicals that go into the products you use every day, and just making sure that we're making the best choices with the information we have available at this time.
And what, so you're creating a product line. This passion is becoming a real business. Is like, why are you, you're a health and wellness person, why are you getting into business, I guess? You said this already, but I really want you to make sure we...
And then you can answer it for yourself too, Nicole. But one of the points that I made is that you and I are driven from the education standpoint. I've worked within nonprofit. You've worked within the academia. We met at a company, a beauty product company. And one thing that I recognize is that not only do we need educators there and people, thought leaders, we also need more products because there's a lack of products on the market. So I can talk education all day, but if I don't provide a solution, especially for women of color, there's a stop point right there. People are going to buy product. And so Nicole and I made the decision that although, again, the space that we occupy, we're passion-led, we are community-led, that we wanted to be a part of the solution. And although we are not beauty people, we have beauty people on our team, which is fantastic, that we wanted to create a product that was safe but also performs. People are not going to buy a product if it doesn't perform. So, but that the foundation, the education behind it would be strong.
So is the market change? I mean, are you seeing a change in the market that there is just more call for this kind of a thing of products? That, I mean, and I guess for me, I started thinking about it and looking for someone like you, I guess, to talk with when I saw this environmental working group survey that showed it was something along the lines of 75% of cosmetics that are marketed to African American women contain potentially hazardous ingredients.
Yes.
And I just thought, like, do people know this? Like,
I'll speak from my personal experience. So the company that I was working at a year ago for close to 2 years, that you would have nonprofits out there discussing these issues, or people from academia, Dr. Ami Zota, discussing these issues, but you didn't really have it within the safer beauty space. Those that were out there discussing it were not really focusing on women of color, which is the group that's impacted the most. And so I spearheaded and began a discussion from the product side about women of color and chemical toxic load as it relates to personal care. And the company that we're launching is a continuation of that discussion that I started. And again, we need more people on the product end that's discussing it as well. It's powerful when you can fuse that nonprofit element and the amazing work that nonprofits do with products and people from the product space actually educating as well. And so there is a growing market in terms of safe beauty, but there's still a gap where we need more people who are creating, as you saw from the EWG study, that there are just not enough options for women of color.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking with Anissa earlier. My daughter and I walked into Ulta, one of the Ulta stores recently, and asked for natural products. And they were like, oh, don't come here for that. And then they wound up, they did have one product line there. But it was such a small piece of this huge store. I had never walked into one of those before. I guess maybe, Nicole, you would talk about, you talked about finding sort of the ingredients that, I'm trying to remember how you phrased it, that are safe to use but also are work. I guess that's sort of the sweet spot there. Mm-hmm. Somehow you have to
perform.
Find.
Yes. So, you know, as, you know, Madame was speaking to, you know, that we need, if we're going to be using, you know, buying and using products, we want them to work. We want them to be beautiful. And so there has to be a safety and performance element for everything that we purchase. So, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is that, you know, one of the things that really is the bigger driver for both Madame and myself is that there is a need for more appropriate and safer options on the market that perform well for women of color. But there is also just this real need to address the bigger issues around lifetime exposures. And so one of the things that drew me to this space is, you know, Madame said, you know, neither of us are really product people. Mm-hmm. We're passionate about getting the message out. But, you know, one of the things that has been really my passion point in my professional career has been around just bringing awareness around our overall chemical exposures in our lifetimes. Yeah. And this affects everybody. This isn't just, you know, particular to one community or another. However, in the U.S., there is sufficient evidence through many different studies and epidemiological studies that women of color, communities of color, and in particular Black females, have a higher body burden for certain chemicals that are known to alter our natural hormone function and potentially are carcinogenic as well than females from any other ethnic group. So that's not to say that's all coming from the personal care products or cosmetics that we use. But when we think about one of the first places that we can make a real change in our daily mm-hmm. habits, it's our food and it's what we put on our bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's also about thinking a little bit more expansively about our responsibility to the next generation. There's, you know, what we expose ourselves to during critical periods of development like pregnancy, or what we expose our young children to in their critical windows post, you know, birth. Those are things that we just really want to keep an eye on because you can reset the system. And so it's a matter of just becoming a bit more aware and feeling empowered about the choices that you can make every day. And in order to do that, you have to have choices. And that's really been one of the things that we want to keep this conversation very alive right now, because even if you think about products that you could use universally, they don't have to be targeted towards communities of color. There are still different buying choices that have historically been part of different ethnic communities, especially in our country. So it's about engaging everyone in that level of conversation, about really having us question what's really a value system for us and what's kind of been just passed down or imposed on us.
Yeah. And then when you look at the buying power, and if I'm going to speak specifically to Black women, you know, in an $84 billion personal care industry, of which $11 billion is about in regards to cosmetics, it is estimated that Black women buy 80% more cosmetics than any other group. So it is not okay that Black women and women of color in general are sidelined and are an afterthought. It is not okay to walk into an Ulta and there is one option that might not even measure up. It's not okay. And it makes me upset. And it keeps me going and keep pushing, because that has to change. The time is now. And so brands that are not adding us on, but that we are central from the get-go, it's absolutely necessary, especially the fact that we have so much buying power within this space.
Yeah, I mean, I guess are you seeing more and more products, people selling these kinds of products, because like, is this market growing? Are you seeing an increased awareness among women that they want natural products, that they want or products that are, I like your phrasing, the safe products. I mean, I hadn't heard that as a phrase before.
And I think you asked it, and I realized I never fully answered the question in terms of, and I said, I'll speak from my personal experience. So when I was talking about the work that I was doing, I was going through and continuing that work through the U.S. and from very grassroots, so from small gatherings to large gatherings, and having speaking and watching people have that aha moment that so many people in general, and not just women of color, but people in general do not understand or are aware of the lack of regulation within the personal care industry, and that, you know, while the EU has banned 1,400 harmful and potentially harmful ingredients, the U.S. has only banned 30. There's not a lot of awareness around that. And so when you speak and you educate, people are like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that, because they assume that they're protected. And the shift will continue to happen, and it is happening at a greater level, the more the education is just like organic versus, you know, it's a movement. So it starts building out, and this has to, and that's what Nicole and I want to do, as well as our team members who are launching this platform with us, is to bring the education to the communities that are impacted the most. And trust me, yes, no, are we where we need to be? Absolutely not. Are we moving along, and are people ready for this information? Absolutely, yes. And I'm looking at your intern who has joined us, who has an interest in this area, and we need young people. And when you look at their generation, they are looking for access to this information, and their voices, not our little 40-plus-year-old voices, Nicole, need to be heard. And when I saw that, it's like, we want ambassadors and young people coming right along with us to help educate the masses that are out there, you know.
Well, this is a good time. Anissa, did you want to ask a couple? You had a couple of questions coming in, so I think this might be a nice time.
You're going to join us, Anissa?
You can just step up to here.
So, hi.
Hi, Anissa.
Hi.
So, I'm not a type of person that uses like natural hair products, because I'm not fully natural yet. I'm actually transitioning.
Okay.
I'm too scared to cut everything off
yet. Okay. It's a process, girl.
So these better hair products seem to be more higher in price. And I do believe that's sometimes a problem when it comes down to wanting to make a change. The whole, is this affordable for me? And I just wanted to know, do you think that's a problem as well? Mm-hmm. Or do you think they'll believe that if they know it's safe, they'll go for it?
Right. Nicole, you want to take this one, or you want me to take it?
Sure. I can give my best answer here. So it's a great question, and it's about market pressures and about moving the market. And so, you know, whenever anything is kind of starting out and it's challenging the status quo, you know, there's a little bit of time. There's a lag in adoption that can occur because prices are a little bit higher or just getting the message out. So I think that when it comes to the safer beauty space, we're kind of in that space right now where people are becoming more aware. They're starting to question what's in their products. They're starting to ask these questions of like, wait a minute, is this healthy for me? Is there something dangerous in here for me? And then, you know, that kind of pressure on the marketplace and on the companies that make the products that you use every day is really positive pressure, because there is a really strong drive right now from big multinational players as well, to really start to figure out what are the chemicals of concern that they're putting in their products and what should we be taking out. So I think it's just, to answer your question a bit, it's a matter of timing. You know, everything is a little bit more expensive when you're using better materials. They do cost a little bit more. And so, you know, manufacturers and companies have to kind of charge a bit more at the beginning. But I'm really excited that I'm seeing a movement towards safer and cleaner across the board. And so I really think that prices are going to start to drop and make it more accessible to everyone. So just demand with your dollar, demand with your with your own awareness of what's good for you and health. It does make a difference. So don't question your personal power. You know, each of us have it. So use it, especially the young generation.
Yeah. And also look at places where you could do basic ingredients and switch outs. For instance, I use coconut oil in my hair, mm-hmm. just a straight coconut oil. So sometimes when you, depending on, of course, if your hair requires more products, right, depending on what's happening, it's just like, are there areas that you could do basic ingredients in to help drive the price point down for yourself?
Yes.
You know, so shea, coconut oil.
Yeah, I've tried making my own. Sometimes I use aloe for my wash and goes, or sometimes Yeah. I make my own protein packs.
Exactly. And it's just like even when I dealt with and still do in terms of getting people to eat healthier, it was like the price point is high. And what I did was I took their existing budget and showed them how they could work within that same budget by being able to shop healthier. But it's real basic, you know? So, yeah.
Did you have any other questions?
I love that question, by the way, because that's real. And it's one of the things that we thought about, too, in terms of launching the brand yes. that we are.
Mm-hmm. No, not for right now.
Okay, if anything okay. else comes up. You know, I do kind of wonder. I mean, you mentioned organic food, and I think that I wonder if you're expecting the same kind of thing to happen that's happened with organics, which it's gotten so big that now the huge companies are, you know, like people who started yeah. organic don't even want to be in it anymore yeah. to a large degree because it's become this huge industry.
And absolutely. Yeah. And I would also say research. You know, Nicole and I recently, we read an article, and I won't name anything, but a brand that, you know, they said they were vegan, and people hear the word vegan and they assume automatically it's safe. But when you take a look at the ingredients, it's not that, you know, it's lacking. And so you ask the question about, are there more companies that are coming up? And they are, but you have to look deeper because there's a lot of greenwashing, and then there are a lot of companies that don't have the knowledge. They don't have a Nicole Acevedo who really understands this space that's on their team. And so they think it's safer, but it's not really, because this is also an area where there needs to be more knowledge out there, period.
Nicole, are there ingredients you might list and say, hey, these are things to look out for? These are things that are commonly in products that you might want to look for, and these are things to be, potentially concerned about, or is that an okay thing to?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It's an okay, definitely an okay thing to ask.
Okay.
Yeah, no. So what makes it tricky? So I'll try to answer it as honestly as I can, because what makes it a little tricky is that as Madame alluded to a little earlier, you know, there is not a lot of regulation mm-hmm. In the personal care space. So that what that means is that companies at this point really aren't required to fully disclose everything that they put into their products onto their labels. So even if you become really savvy and you're looking for key ingredients that are of concern that you hear about, they may not be on there. So that's just my one layer of disclaimer there. But, you know, there are a lot of, I guess I'm going to make it more about categories of ingredients that people can be looking out for. So some of them are, you know, what are known carcinogens. And so, like, anything that's formaldehyde. Formaldehyde has historically been used in some products as a preservative system, or formaldehyde-releasing compounds have been used as preservatives in a lot of products over time. But formaldehyde is also commonly used in a lot of hair straighteners. And you know, really the high heat Brazilian hair treatments, like the keratin treatments. So that's another thing to be aware of, is in terms of that process, it can release a lot of formaldehyde, which is a known carcinogen. You also have chemicals that have been shown to, you know, affect the way that your hormone system works. And so this is a particularly relevant, especially in the Black communities, where you have something that even sounds natural and good, like placental extract. Placental extract, you know, is used to nourish the hair and has been for a very long time. Unfortunately, it's chock full of hormones. And there are several studies spanning over the last 20 years almost, really showing that women that use these placental extracts in their hair and use it on their young girls, it can actually induce early puberty in very young girls. And so it's this awareness that, you know, just because you put it on your body, you think, well, it's not going to have an effect. Well, there are certain, you know, natural ingredients and synthetic ingredients that your body can actually absorb and use really effectively. So just being aware of things that have the potential to act like hormones or interfere with our hormone system. which, you know, in terms of picking them out on a label, other than a placental extract, can be a little tricky. But another category of chemicals are the parabens, which were used and are still used as really strong and effective preservatives in a lot of products, especially cosmetics, but can have these hormone-mimicking effects. The other, you know, really big, broad category, which is a relative, it's one that's hard to parse out, but it's the fragrance, right? It's the fragrance category where, you know, manufacturers will just use, they can use hundreds of different chemical compounds as a fragrance, and they just list it as fragrance. And so it can hide a lot of synthetic and potentially harmful ingredients. And one of the biggest kind of, one of those chemicals that almost always creeps into those synthetic fragrances is the phthalates, the phthalate chemicals, which have been shown, some of them have been shown to very effectively disrupt your hormonal system. They can act as anti-androgens, anti-estrogens, or weak estrogens. So they're really powerful in that sense. And sadly, once again, they're not listed on the label, so you just have to be a little bit more aware that these things might creep in different ways.
Mm-hmm. If someone says natural fragrance, is that, are we okay there, or do we try? I've seen that a lot. That's why I ask.
Yeah, you know, it can be fine, but once again, it may not. So natural fragrance, if it all depends on how you define it. So a natural fragrance, if it's categorized under like the natural, I think it's the Natural Products Association. Don't quote me on that. but there is a classification, means it needs to come from a botanical source. It can't be overly like manipulated, and you know, so it's as close to nature as possible. It can be categorized as a natural fragrance. But once again, it's the fact that there is no oversight, and so in the personal care industry, so you can put whatever you want. You can, you know, manufacturer is not held to any standard in terms of how they market it. So it's, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's a toss-up. I mean, you just don't necessarily know. Now, sometimes manufacturers will use essential oils as scents, you know, in fragrances or flavors in their products. Mm-hmm. And they can put those right on the label so you can at least see what's there.
Yeah, and I don't want to take too long on this, but phthalates, I mean, everyone became aware of phthalates. Are those is that the same thing that's like a plasticizer kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you see all kinds of like your plastic bottles now say phthalate free, but the fact that they're still putting it in things you actually put on your face.
Right. And, you know, it can be on your nail. So that's the thing people wonder, like, well, why would it be in my cosmetics if it's a plasticizer? But, you know, when you think about fragrance, you, especially the synthetic fragrances, you notice how long they last in the air or on your body. Mm-hmm. It's because something is in there that's helping it stick. Right. And so that's where some of those phthalates actually work. Those plasticizers actually work to kind of keep the scent in place. But, you know, they can effectively land on your body and stay there and have an effect. And they can also be used in nail polish, and, you know, they create that plasticizing effect in nail polish as well. So,
and I know we should probably wrap up, but I do want to ask this sort of kind of a business question. Like, are the major cosmetics manufacturers really looking into this as a space that they're going to step into? Are we going to see sort of real alternatives for women, especially women of color, but women in general, where there are going to be things available, you know, products available for people who want to be more careful about what they're putting on their bodies. I mean, do you see this? Do you think that that's happening, or do you think companies like yours, who I imagine are starting smaller,
right?
Because like you say, it's just not really. And I will say, I went to this natural products expo in Cleveland. It was kind of a small thing, but it was everybody's homemade products. It was,
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, the efficacy was unclear, I guess I would say.
Right,
that, you know.
Right. I'll step in first, and then, Madame, if you want to follow through with your response. But, you know, what I can see, I actually work right now in several working groups that interface different industries as well as the nonprofit space and state agencies and academia. So I'm able to live in this wonderful intersection of what everyone's doing to try to work towards safer chemistries as well as more sustainable products. Mm-hmm. And so what I can say from being in that space and being in that kind of, you know, just floating around those different spaces is that there is a tremendous movement overall towards making things safer and more sustainable across different industries, including the personal care space. And this includes the multinationals. This includes a lot of the big brands we're talking, you know, that we see on the store shelves every day. You know, I think that one of the things that is still lagging in the communities that we want to work with is the conversation around safer, like kind of understanding why we make choices that we make in terms of buying the products that we do. Are we asking the right questions, you know? And also, does a performance match what our communities need? Or is it just targeted more globally, you know, to a bit more of a homogeneous target demographic for the company? So there's multiple conversations that are, you know, we hope to really build out of what we're doing. And at the end of the day, you know, it really is about just bringing more awareness. And, you know, certainly we don't seek to be the only solution out there. It's more about, you know, from a product standpoint, it's just let's start the conversation in a more serious manner. Let's think, let's get everyone engaged in really defining what we define as beauty for ourselves, what we define as healthy and nourishing for ourselves. And that's going to mean different things to different people, but we would just want to really get that conversation going.
Yeah, and just to focus this, I mean, I don't want to be blunt, but to say, like, are we just going to start seeing more natural products for white women with money rather than black women who may not have as much money? I mean, are these companies really going to be focusing on that audience, you know, that consumer group?
Right. And I think, you know, that's where one of the reasons why Nicole and I decided to create a solution for women of color in particular, because we felt that there was still a gap in the market space, even within safe beauty. Again, with population of women of color being sidelined and afterthought and added on. And go back to what I said earlier, that that's not okay. And, you know, they say greenwashing, and I say also racewashing in terms of companies pretending to care about, have products for communities of color, and that's truly not the case. And so there's so many layers, political, social, all that. And that's why I believe, although I did not foresee myself in the beauty space, I find it to be one of the most powerful spaces, because you go deeper to the existing. And I feel like I'm coming full circle to with where the conversation started with my personal journey of self-embrace, right? Which is the story of many black women who are out there, but coming full circle to that space of having deeper conversation past, you might know that something is safer, but if you haven't embraced, and there's still skin lighteners are still being sold, hair straighteners, and so the conversation is a big is deeper than just is the product safe or not, but what's really pushing us to buy these products.
Yeah. But and I know we want to wrap up. Sorry, but like just to go into the store like Ulta, and not only it was rare to find a safe product to begin with, that was hard to find, but to find one that was targeted to African American women, that was not happening in that store.
Yeah. So, as Nicole said, there is a shift happening, but we have a ways to go as well, and hoping that more brands that are cropping up who are doing this authentically, not because it's just a business opportunity, but authentically, we're hoping that others will come on the bandwagon and do the same. So everything has to start somewhere. And there are brands who have started the conversation. I'm not saying we're the ones who are the first brand bringing this conversation, but we want to be a part of that. And we want to provide a solution that we trust, you know, so.
Okay. I mean, and just to say, it's somewhat new even to go into a regular CVS or whatever, you know, pharmacy and see products that are focused on women of color. You know, I feel like in the past few years I've started seeing that near us. We're in Ohio, so maybe we're a little late to the game on these kind of things.
And then, you know, you have the launch of brands that are not necessarily in the safer beauty space, such as Fenty Beauty. You know, love the fact that, you know, they came out strong with having product for women with deeper tones. But again, they're not in the safer beauty space. I would love to see that crop up within that space as well and having the options out there.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much. I do appreciate all the time. And Nicole, thanks. It's been great talking with you.
Thank
you. My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. I'm going to hang up.
Bye.